Right, some of your comments here. I'm in the Trent Churchill area. I'm with the Three Network. I'm unable to receive incoming calls. I've been reporting this to I've been reporting this three times every day for the past 2 weeks and nothing has been done. Anyone else having an issue? Like, listen, I don't want to do the old reboot, but if it were I, just to be on the safe side, I would shut the phone down, remove the SIM card, give the SIM card a good wipe. I know that sounds a bit strange. Reinsert the SIM card and power it back up again. If you've tried that already, I'm really, really sorry. But just in case it's an isolated incident, that often can resolve some of those issues. Power down the phone completely, shut it off, take out the SIM card, wipe it, reinsert it, reboot the phone. Hopefully, maybe, on the off chance, that might help. Whatever your listeners does, Greg, please don't book any pink tickets via GoGo. We had 2,000 from our account buying rugby tickets. You lost it, did you? I'm going to have to dig into that a little bit more. Hi, Greg. Tell the lady to wait on resale tickets on Ticketmaster nearer the time. There'll always be people selling due to circumstances beyond their control, but she needs to keep a very good eye on the Ticketmaster website. This is one of our listeners desperate to get a pair of tickets for her 18-year-old daughter. Greg, what the government wants us to vote? Yes, we have to vote. The opposition is no, because we know that what they want us to vote is for the good of the government. They are dictators, but we know what they're trying to do is to get all mothers out to work and get strangers in to mind the children. Okay. So the children will have no attachment to the mother, who will have to be aware of that. Now, that's one person's interpretation of it. Disgraceful how the terminology women in the home is being exploited to secure a yes vote. It's like turkeys to vote for Christmas. Vote no, says listener. I think most... this is a little bit like the define a woman question. I think most people understand that, or should understand, and certainly no one should be misled, be it government or otherwise, that the phrase women in the home is not actually used. But that was the general interpretation, and it seemed to go unchallenged for a long, long time. So I understand why it is used, but there should be no doubt that that is not referenced in that fashion in the Constitution. A caller says people need to get out and vote no, because if the no's vote, that don't. If they don't, if the no's don't, then the yeses will. You're right, Greg. You're not going to get a consensus from solicitors. But remember, he was the Attorney General. What you will get is a judge working on hard cases. And we all know hard cases make bad laws. If family is redefined, if hate speech is enforced, we'll be limited in what can be argued, as it'll be discriminatory. Too many big changes without definition. So vote no, no, or we'll be bolting the door after the horse has bolted. Yes, the only thing is if Michael McDougall had come out with a different position, and this is whataboutery, I suppose, to some extent, he would have been the darling of the left and the devil of the right, if you know what I mean. It's just the way we work in this country now, in lots of countries. It's just like, oh, so that person agrees with me. I don't care about their background or whatever. They're amazing. Or I disagree with that person. Clearly, they're you know, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, we are joined on the program by Luke. How are you getting on, Luke?
Not so bad, Greg, and yourself.
Good, good, good. We were chatting to you, weren't we? We were chatting to you about a month ago. Your business was broken into, Luke, in Kildaff.
That's right, Greg. I was broken in about a month ago now, and unfortunately, sad to say, it looks like they were back again over the weekend. Now, no real major damage was done or anything like that. It was just, it looked like the prize, the tin back in the door to try and gain entry, but they didn't succeed. For we've kind of, the door now is more reinforced up there and there's better security, so they probably seen that when they landed and they let on again, you know.
I mean, imagine coming back again.
I know. Yeah. It's not looking good, is it?
No.
But no, thankfully there was nothing stolen or anything, but they were back again anyways, but it's just they didn't succeed in getting in this time.
Right, which is good, but you just wouldn't have thought them coming back again. And you've come back on with us, really, I suppose, to get the message out to people that these gangs, these individuals, are back in and around the area, and to make sure that their property is fully secure. They seem to have an interest, particularly in sheds.
Big time. Now, they were out as well by Glasses School in front of where that's south around the Carrandon area. And they were seen in Movella as well yesterday during the day. So they're about even during the day. So it's really just to make people aware. They're around day and night now, just so anything at all suspicious, report it to the garage straight away.
All right, good warning, Luke. Listen, it's actually really quite a violation that they should come back to you again. But anyway, I appreciate you taking the time out to help us get the message out there.
Not a bother. Thanks very much,
Luke. That's Luke Ruddy. He's in Coldaff. He was targeted a month ago. They came back, it seems, but obviously the security had been improved. They couldn't get in, but they were trying to pry the doors open. He's saying, look, these gangs or individuals or groups of individuals are back in Carn and Ballyliffin areas, and he wants to make people aware of the gangs because they're going around in vans and scouting the area as well. So please be vigilant. If you spotted anything suspicious or you were a victim of crime in those areas, please let us know. 086 60 25,000, that's the WhatsApp and text number, or give us a call on 074 91 25,000. Right, it is the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio, and we are moving on to our next item now. We're joined by two guests, I hope, Siobhan Gannon and Helen O'Driscoll. Good morning to both of you. Are you there, Siobhan?
I am. Good morning.
Good to have you with us. And also Helen. How are you getting on, Helen?
Hello, good morning. I'm great, thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have the two of you on the programme. We're talking about enlightenment in the bedroom, relationships, intimacy and sexual wellness. Now, we're not going to dig too deep in this, right? But if anyone is particularly sensitive, maybe they want to stick their fingers in their ears, or maybe they shouldn't, I don't know. But talk to us, Helen. You're a co-host of Enlightenment in the Bedroom Ireland. What is this? What is it?
Well, as the name suggests, it's to bring light, and myself and Siobhan are launching this together in Ireland. We decided to launch it in Donegal. And really, it's about bridging the gap between sensuality, sexuality and spirituality. And in terms of topics we're going to be speaking about, which is sex, intimacy and relationships. Siobhan has long been in this work, and herself and myself got together. We're friends from another group, and it just seemed like a really, really perfect fit because it's really time to start having these relationships. I myself am really interested in relationships and the quality of relationships, and how that we know that the quality of it is really determines the quality of life. I mean, it's really as simple as that. So, yeah, we're really excited to bring it to Letterkenny, first off.
Siobhan, it's like having children, really. There's no, you know, there's no training in school as such or nothing. We kind of stumble through life, don't we? Really hoping it goes well for us. And then I suppose when things start going a little bit bad, then we hit you know, we often hit the panic button or what have you. So, you know, it's, we probably do need a little guiding hand sometimes.
Yeah, that's how I actually entered into this world of holistic health and wellness in the first place, because I had psoriatic arthritis and depression and fibromyalgia in my 30s. And it actually stemmed back from, you know, trauma I had at 18. And it was only on that journey that I realized my belief systems, cultural beliefs, you know, generational stuff, all of that was actually impacting my mental and my emotional states, which in fact was having a detrimental effect on my physical health. So I think we don't really realize the generational traumas that have actually really impacted our lives now currently. So I think the bringing in these positive conversations and talking more about it and just opening the floor and opening the space, especially in a country like this, a very Catholic country, we don't always talk about it, and our parents didn't talk about it. And these do impact our future generations. They impact our children. So it's very important, I feel, from my own experience as well and in my clinical work, and looking at the impact it's had on my own children, I have three of my own, I've really noticed the difference in, you know, going into my own healing and opening up that space.
And the other thing I want to say about that, you know, you said, Greg, that we're taught that love is a feeling, you know, whereas the Greeks, you know, classed as love as a classroom. You know, so how are we meant to know this stuff other than what Siobhan said, you know, the social, you know, the social conditioning, the cultural messages, etc. So yeah, we yeah, you know, maybe it's a skill to be learned as well. Maybe we can look at from that way as well.
And if people sort of self-diagnose that maybe, you know, they don't feel confident in themselves or in their life, and it's impacting on, you know, their freedom in the bedroom, or if they think they've got hang-ups or what have you, is that kind of stuff discussed, Helen? Is that important to sort of tease out?
You know, if you look at the research, that is the single biggest problem is that people actually don't know how to start having the conversation. The words are unfamiliar in their mouth. They're just even, you know, particularly in situations where you're with your partner for a long time. So we're just not practiced in having those conversations. And the research will tell you that the people who are most comfortable talking about their intimate sex lives are the ones that do most well in relationships. So it's yeah, if we can start to have, and I guess, you know, a kind of measure around that as well is like, how good are you anyway as an individual about having really tricky,
Well,
complicated
that's, listen,
conversations? Do
I
you know what I
mean,
mean?
if you speak to a relationship expert, you will get one partner who has an issue. The first piece of advice is find a way to talk about it. Because we don't talk about it, and then we go
That's
and
right.
seek advice or experts. So it doesn't matter whether it's about, you know, the intimacy in a relationship, to do with the children, to do with bills or whatever you, whatever. Often when we get the calls in here, it's really the first point of port of call, and it's something we avoid. And I'm not sure if it's cultural, is actually talking about it, Siobhan. Do you know what I mean? Like, well, what, why have Why have we do we seem to have gone off the ball? Why does intimacy feel a little bit awkward?
Well, from my own experience again, and working with people for the last 15 years, I feel most of it's down to cultural in that way. And there's a lot of shame and guilt around sex, a lot of shame and guilt around sensuality, around intimacy. And that's really showcasing in our children at the moment. They're like, you know, it's from like one extreme to the other, isn't it?
Is it
And
like
we're
sort
trying
of a part of two? Is this part when we talk about culturally, right? And it's different with different generations, whereby a woman might feel she has to hide a high sex drive or something like that there, and a fella might actually have to amplify
Yes.
where he's. Is that kind of what we're talking about here? That we find ourselves falling into sort of stereotypes and what society expects from us, and a guilt to go outside of that?
Absolutely, absolutely. But this is stemming as well from the generations back because so much was covered and so much, there was more, so much shame. Like, even to think about sex before marriage, I mean, that wasn't accepted in my house all those years ago. You know, so sex before marriage, having a baby outside marriage, I mean, there's so much shame generationally coming through that it has to impact us. It impacts us on a subconscious level, so we're not actually even consciously aware of the impact it's having on us. So all of those women's, I'm going to be speaking around pleasure and finding your gateway to your pleasure potential, and I'll be talking especially around women's pleasure. And if you think about men and women in relationships, you often hear, you know, the girls talking about, oh, he's not measuring up in the bedroom. But you know what? There's a massive percentage of women who don't know anything about their own sexuality. So I'm all about not outsourcing, but actually finding what it is that actually turns you up and on. And I don't mean just in the bedroom, but I mean outside of the bedroom, because the way we are in the bedroom actually does reflect, you know, the way that we show up in all our relationships. It's such a massive piece, you
So
know
are
what I
you
mean?
saying
It's
that
a
we
massive
can't necessarily expect someone to meet our expectations if we don't really understand ourselves or what have you? So you have to sort of get to know yourself and what you like before you can start saying, well, he or she don't get it.
100%, 100%.
Men connect differently, Helen. That's topic two. Talk to me about that one.
Yeah, well, Sheena Lawless, who's our guest speaker, is going to be speaking about that topic, and she's got an awful lot of experience in it. Yeah, they do connect differently. I think it goes back again into the cultural messages and the social norms. And the thing is, a lot of this stuff comes from, like, decades ago. They call it actually a sexual script theory. So we all have particular ideas about, and particularly men, about what we're meant to be doing in the bedroom, and women, actually both. And also we're kind of we're socially conditioned, that men are meant to be strong and powerful, not meant to ask for help, and women are, well, we're just nurturers, aren't we? I mean, that's what we've been trained to do. So, they do connect differently, and it's just about, it's about highlighting that. But also, what's really interesting, when you look at the data, and when you look at how all of this is presented, even from, a Hollywood perspective or whatever, there's one very narrow idea of what a man should, we're talking about obviously heterosexual relationships here, of what a man should be and how he should show up. And it's the same with m women. So it's just about understanding that, you know what I mean? And it goes back to, again, if I know myself, like, so be the change I want to be in the world. If I know myself, then what I need or whatever, and a man in his own right knows his own peace, then when you come together, it just makes for a much more fulfilling
I mean,
peace.
there are
So
gener it's generational too, because this, I presume, is
yes.
about healthy, constructive, mutually satisfying relationships. There's a generation of people that their expectation is what they've seen in 50 Shades of Grey,
That's
potentially.
right.
But
Yeah.
also too, what we have is another generation coming through, very sadly, and this is far more seriously, younger people, where women are just, and it's heterosexual or whichever type of relationship, but that one partner, there's an expectation of them, what they're expected to do and express in an intimate situation, and the other side, how they treat their partner in that situation. So there's actually a cycle that's going on through life here, and I think the next generation coming through, it's actually going to be even more challenging to establish what is, what you're trying to achieve in this in
Yeah,
this
I mean,
show.
actually, the Gen Zs, it seems like the Gen Zs are actually going to have, there's going to be less marriages with the Gen Zs, but actually, their marriages are going to be more fulfilling. And the reason
Their
is because
relationships will be.
they're going to be much more informed. So there won't be as many marriages, but, and they will also have the realization that this one person is, it's not their responsibility to fulfill 100% of my needs. So it actually is going to look different.
Well, it is difficult, relationships in this day and age too, though, of course, Siobhan, because you've got situationships, you've got people that, want to shift and drift. There's all people that
Are big teenage kids by any chance?
no, I'm just a big.
I like that expression.
Well, I've got a
I've
couple.
heard it. Yeah.
I've got a couple of other ones, but they're not radio friendly. But but people want all different things. So you could find yourself, say, if you're a fella and you sort of want to get serious with someone, and another fella or a girl, they want to play it fast and loose, and they've had a bad relationship, and it's difficult to find your way in all of that, and matching up, expectations, maybe morals or whatever it might be.
Yeah, and I'm a mum of three. But they're old now, 25, 22, and 20, and two girls and a boy. So I'm aware of all of that. That's what I say, shifting and drifting. I've heard that one. But yeah, they're all in relationships, and as a single parent of 12 years, it was very important to me to bring in the boys and not just the girls after coming out of a divorce myself. So it was very important for me to include my son in that and not to take my issues out on him. So that's how I kind of went on this journey, and he teaches me so much about the perspective coming from young men, and how they're not seen. So there's so much in it. So all my, I suppose, coming from a parental point of view, but also from my own experience growing up and not having the resources I needed when I was in those times and very troubled times from my past. I won't go into that. But the nervous system, we go back to the nervous system time and time again, and we know from neuroplasticity that the nervous system isn't in a fixed state. So we can actually change our belief systems, and we can change the emotional impact you know, our thoughts have as well. So everything comes into it: mindset, emotions, resilience. It's all about the nervous system and actually expanding it to actually create more pleasure, but also more emotional resilience and mindset. And that's what I did with my children, and their relationships are so amazing with their partners. I just watch it and I'm in awe, because I didn't have that relationship, but they have their own space. They give each other their own space. They're so respectful in ways that, you know, I wasn't raised with and I didn't have in my own relationship. So I feel those type of relationships are the ones we really want to see in the world. Mm. We want to see the change, because these are the kids that are changing our
but
world.
But I suppose you also
they?
Have to, you stand it in long-term relationships. You know, if you sort of have a couple of lines between men and women, you know, where even just something as simple as libido, where one might go up and one might dip, and then the other one starts coming back up again, and then the other one might plateau or whatever, you know. So I don't think necessarily if you've been with someone since you were both 23, things have changed an awful lot for both of you maybe by the time you're 55. And I think too, Helen, and listen, it's not intentional, but I think really maybe what we're talking about here could be proven by, I'm sure there's maybe couples listening in the car have been listening to this in the car, and it's been a little bit awkward, and you know, it's like, oh, I wonder what's on 2FM. It's probably Jenny Green talking about something much more detailed than
we
are.
Lucky that they've all tuned in.
No, but my point is you know, we're in the kitchen, you know, that what are we going to Lidl? You know what I mean? And I think that maybe is a symptom of that, maybe, you know, the lines of communications and the ability to talk about that are, you know, I think it's a good thing for couples to say, right, you know what, if that conversation felt a little bit awkward, well, maybe, you know, there's a reason for that.
Yeah. And a tip, you know, with regards, you know, if maybe that's something that's not discussed in a relationship, a really good tip is start on the outside. Don't start on the inside of the relationship. So you say, gosh, do you know what? I was listening to this an amazing radio station this morning with Siobhan and Helen on. And oh my God, you know what, Paddy, you should listen to it, because it's just, you know, so what, you don't start on the inside, you don't bring attention to what's happening in your relationship, if that's a tricky place at the moment for you to go. Start on the outside. And then, because if we haven't done it and if it's unfamiliar, we have to make the familiar, we have to make the unfamiliar familiar and the familiar unfamiliar.
Are couples more inclined than Helen to blame each other and not speak about it?
So what happens really, I think, in a lot of the time, and research bears this out, and if you look at Gottman, he is kind of the international expert, and really what happens is that we lose a kind of a sense of connection, we lose our sense of fun, that's the biggest thing, and relationships and partnerships become about to-do lists. And he looked, he studied 40,000 couples, and when they are asked, well, why did you come for therapy, or why did you come for sex therapy? And their line is, fun has come to die in our relationship. So even before we get into the bedroom, like, let's just practice it, start practicing, you know, connection and having the crack and being playful. I remember listening to this podcast, and the therapist suggested that the couple go home. Now, they had a very prim and proper house and everything was in place, and they had a 9-year-old daughter and they were very busy at work and very successful. And the therapist said, right, at the weekend, I want you to go home and I want you to have a mud fight in the garden. And they were like, oh my God, I'm appalled. You know, they were just appalled and they were so not going to do it. And I don't know how the 9-year-old found out about it, but anyway, they did. And the 9-year-old would not stop at them to have this mud fight. So they all, you know, they didn't really even have old clothes to get into at the weekend. And anyway, they got into the old clothes at the weekend and they had this mud fight. And after a couple of minutes, they just forgot themselves and they all ended up rolling around. So, you know, fun can break down. Sorry, that's my dog. Fun can break down, you know, our barriers. Oh, my goodness. Sorry, guys.
It's National Love Your Pet Day, you know, by the way. So maybe the dog's... Yeah, it is, actually. So maybe the dog... She's away. All right, Helen's away. She's got to sort out the relationship with the dog now as well. Siobhan, we are going to have to move on.
Sorry, guys.
No, it's okay, Helen. It's real life.
That's true. It's real life.
Exactly. I don't mind that at all. Play it fast and loose. So in terms of then the content, okay, are we going to hear words like willies and boobs? Are there going to be images? You know, like, what if people turn up on the night, it's on the 23rd of February, 7 to 10 p.m. Is it like a frank adult chat about stuff?
Well, my section's around pleasure and the nervous system. So I will be talking about women's pleasure. I'll be talking about all of those bits and just educational. There'll be a bit of fun. But there will be. We're going to go with the flow as well. And it's a 30, each person is 30 minutes. You come in, you get your drink, you sit down. We're going to have a few spot prizes. We're going to have loads of laughs. We have a nice little gang already gathering. And it's just going to be fun and entertaining. And you're going to leave with something, with probably loads of nuggets.
I want to know what the spot prizes are. Is it a box of biscuits or something more exciting?
Can't tell you. It's a surprise.
Well, we can't tell you now. But you'll definitely leave. You'll definitely leave with a ton of information and a change of mindset.
Okay,
100% guaranteed.
The other thing I want to say is, look, it is a safe place. It's not like you're going to be coming in and you're going to be asked about your deepest, darkest. It's a night of entertainment as well. I think that's the really other important thing to say. You're not going to be compromised in any way. It's not that because somebody said to me, "Oh my God, no, I couldn't, I'd be too prudish." So it's not, it's a really safe place to have a lot of fun, where your nervous system will be nice and calm and you'll be able to take all this information in.
Okay,
right.
Open to singles, couples, thruples, for crying out loud. You never know. You never know. What might happen. All right.
Yeah.
Listen.
And Greg, can I just clarify as well, the whole thing for enlightenment in the bedroom, this particular event is the first one in Ireland and we're going to take it around the country. But we're delighted in Donegal for the opening. But it is about you don't have to interact. It's not like a workshop or something that you don't. It's just your chance to come in, and it's an invitation to just sit and listen, take what you need, whatever doesn't resonate, leave it behind. Mm-hmm. Just have a bit of crack. Come with a group of your girlfriends, a group with your with the lads, come as couples. It's a really relaxed evening.
Oh, it's okay.
Loads of crack.
It's in the Glencast Suite in the Mount Argyle Hotel. If people want tickets, contact the hotel, or what way are you doing that?
Eventbrite.com, Greg, yeah.
Okay. Or you can private message. I mean, see you there, Greg.
We'll see you there. We look forward to it.
It's all sorted for me. Don't worry about it, ladies. Do you need a fourth speaker? I've got it all sorted out. All right, take care of yourselves. Thanks so much, Siobhan and Helen.
You.
All right, okay, back with more after these. Now we're joined on the programme by Donegal's new Garda Chief Superintendent, Gretty Sheridan. Good morning and a big congratulations to you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Good morning, Greg, and thanks very much for having me.
I suppose, you know, career progression is fantastic, and it must feel... you must be very proud, as must your family and friends, to be appointed the new Garda Chief Superintendent for this county.
Yeah, I'm delighted, Greg. Yeah, I never imagined when I joined the Guards in August 93 that I would ever be a Chief Superintendent. So, yeah, delighted. I suppose I've worked hard over the years and worked through the different ranks. So, yeah, it's delighted now to be Chief Superintendent on Donegal, and you know, that is an added bonus to be left here looking after policing in Donegal is a privilege and an honour.
And you've served in a number of Garda districts. You were in the capital, weren't you? Sligo, Buncrana, of course, Castlereagh.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, I started out in Dublin, so I spent the guts of 20 years in Dublin between Shankill and Dunleary and Bray and in the city centre and immigration, and then I did 9 years in Tala, working in community policing there and in drugs, as a sergeant there. And that, to be honest, that was probably my happiest time working in Tala. That was a real honour as well at that time. So moved back up to Letterkenny then in April 2013 as an inspector. And coming from Tala, I did think, God, this could be very quiet in Donegal. I hope I'm not bored. But needless to say, I wasn't bored in Donegal. It was, you know, it's a busy place. So, you know, a great place to work as well.
And this appointment came around really, it could only have come around following the decision to leave Donegal as a standalone Garda division. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah, so like a competition was run for the position of Chief Superintendent. So I was successful in the competition, so you were put on a panel. So just at the outset, I suppose, they had made a decision that Donegal, Sligo, Leitrim would be one division. And then last August, then the commissioner reviewed that decision and decided to leave Donegal on its own. And I suppose that was down to I suppose, an overall review of how that would look like, and then obviously submissions made then by local representatives and the Public Partnership Network and other people around the county that made submissions to the Commissioner in relation to that.
Well, part of your job going forward, obviously, to be, you know, to organise the resources that you have, but also too, and I suppose a lot of this would happen, you know, where we wouldn't be aware of it, but to make representations to HQ to say, you know, this is our particular situation or we need these particular resources. I mean, obviously, sometimes those requests would be listened to, and other times they say, well, you know, that's not really, we can't really do that right now. Is that a part of the job, and how significant a part of the job is to sort of increase what you believe or to get the resources that you believe is needed to police the county?
Yeah, well, that's a big part of it, is, you know, the HR side of running the division. And I suppose, like every chief in the country, I'm going to be fighting my corner trying to get adequate resources into Donegal. I suppose we're all pulling from the one pot in the organisation, so it's to highlight the needs of Donegal, you know, the particular needs of Donegal. And I suppose we're unique in that our border is primarily with Northern Ireland, which is another jurisdiction, and then we have a huge coastline. So that certainly would be one aspect of, you know, looking for resources to be deployed up here, or further resources to be deployed.
And it's a huge land mass with, you know, a relatively small population too, which is kind of another unique element of it.
Yeah, like I suppose if I compare to like working in Tala, like that was, you know, the divisional headquarters was in Crumlin. So you had Crumlin, Rathmines, Tala and Terenure, they were your, and Rathfarnham, that was your area. So everything was in a very short distance. So, like Donegal, like if I have to go down to the superintendent of Ballyshannon, who's current up there, or over to Milford, to David Keller up to Buncrana, to Sean Grant, you know, it's not a skip over the road. It's a, you know, it's a journey, it's a trek, and it's the same for any of the guards working at the front line. Like, I mean, they're covering big areas.
Mm. And of course, you're having to operate in a changing landscape, decisions being made outside of this region, you know, different ways of policing models, pilots, you know, that type of stuff. That all has to be, you have to do your job in that context as well.
Yeah, so there is a new operating model coming into the Guards. It has been piloted and it's been implemented in some divisions across the country. So Donegal is in the pipeline, so that'll be one of my primary jobs now, is looking at how that's going to look from a county perspective. And, you know, we'll have superintendents in charge of community engagement, crime, and then performance assurance is another aspect of it. So, you know, it'll be, I suppose, me sitting down with my senior leadership team here in Donegal and trying to map out how that will look.
Yeah. So if I say, for instance, I'm interviewing a new CEO of the council, someone who's been elevated to that position or recently elected mayor, and an obvious question is, you know, what are your priorities or what do you hope to improve, or what particular areas do you think we need to improve on? Is that a fair question to ask you as well? I mean, can you bring that to the job where you can say, right, there's certain areas that I think we need to sort of focus a little bit more on or switch resources around? I'm not, listen, asking you to outline the Garda plan as such, but you have that. That's within your gift as well, I presume, to run the policing in this county the way you think is best to do so.
Yeah, well, like there are different issues, no more than any other division, but let's say we've set up a divisional drug unit now, which has been very successful, and I certainly would see that as a primary, targeted approach. And then community engagement, I suppose, we were very good during COVID, and I suppose a lot of our resources have been pulled to the front line. So again, let's try and get back on the street again, interacting with the community. Again, I would be chairperson of the sexual assault response team for the county and for the Donegal Domestic Abuse Liaison Group in the county. So again, it's, you know, working with other stakeholders, looking after victims of crime, looking after those most vulnerable in society. So, you know, there's many facets to policing, and it's not all, unfortunately, it's not all cops and robbers. Like, there's the other side of things. A lot of our work would be deemed maybe social interaction or social work from, you know, from different perspectives.
I don't want to be unfair in any questioning, but is there a number or is there a feeling as to in where we are in terms of resources, you know what I mean? So if really, ideally and realistically, you know, we'd have 100%. Is there a figure where we're at now that, you know, that we're trying to cover 100% of police work with another percentage of actual resources, human resources?
Well, I think like any division will say that they haven't adequate resources.
Yeah,
so,
course,
like, I mean,
yeah.
And I think it's, I suppose we have a recruitment campaign ongoing at the minute, and I'll certainly be looking to get some
your
of those resources when they're trained up. And the county, I'll be beating that drum 100% to try and get some more resources into the county. Like, you can never have enough resources, I suppose, it's the same in any profession.
And I have spoken to preachers of yours that can find that process a little bit frustrating. And it's not, you can't go on the radio and go, well, I asked for this and I didn't get it. It can be kind of complicated to sort of relate the lobbying work you do in that regard. But I suppose with the 6,000 plus new applicants and also some moves to increase the reserve force up to 1,000. I'm not sure if that's been announced yet, but I know it's up for discussion at Cabinet today. As you say, you'll be hoping to get what you would say is our fair share of those resources.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. So certainly, I'll have Donegal's interest, you know, front and centre, so I'll certainly be canvassing for whatever resources are available. I'll certainly be confident that we get our fair share.
All right, Gretty. Lots of wishes. Greg, huge congratulations to Gretty on her new appointment to Chief Superintendent. Great honour for a Rathmullen lady. That comes in from Mary. Delighted for Gretty. Rathmullen is super proud of you. Let's not get too parochial on this. Greg, could you wish Gretty Sheridan all the best from all at the Rye Community Centre? And on it goes, people wishing you well in your role. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
Oh, very good. Thank you.
And we'll talk again.
Thanks,
okay, bye-bye. That's Donegal's new Garda Chief Superintendent, Gretty Sheridan there, 086 60 25,000, talking about enlightenment in the bedroom. Well done, says this listener. It's time for Donegal to understand sex. Okay. On to scams. I missed two calls from a private number. I missed them. Then three calls came. I answered. A man said, what was a good time to deliver my suite of furniture? I said, I didn't order it. He kept saying yes. Where will I leave it? Shall I leave it at the front door? I said, do you have a name for me? He said, no, just a no. So I told him to pee off. And did he think I was stupid? He just laughed, kept talking. I hung up, also said it was already paid for. Another thing too, and I'm not sure if he's selling an item and I would be really careful, particularly with high valued items, because it was not a high-valued item, but of value. But a couple of calls whereby someone was interested, or might get up to see it, what's your air code? And I was thinking when they said that, right? So say you advertised, you know, a BMW for 12,000 or something, right? And say in the pictures the BMW seemed to be in a rural area. Is it crazy for me to think that maybe someone down the country say, look, I'm coming up this afternoon to have a look at it, what's your air code? And then, you know, not turn up to look at it, but they know where this car is, potentially in a rural area. And I'd just be really careful about giving out air codes willy-nilly, because you can imagine that happens. I would say it happens. 086 60 25,000. Right, we're going to be talking about if it's time to get rid of outdated school uniforms. And I don't mean in terms of design. I mean them completely. Emma D'Souza is a writer and political commentator and joins us on the programme now. Emma, good morning to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, we're going to talk about this old subject that comes up time and time again about the school uniform. Should we have school uniforms? Shouldn't we? I'm so on the fence. I've got splinters in my bum. I can see both arguments one way or other. What have you been writing about? Where do you stand on this?
The thing is, Greg, is with more and more young people in Ireland going to non-uniform schools, I think it is important to have a conversation about what purpose do uniforms serve, because there's no empirical evidence or irrefutable evidence that they really serve any purpose. They don't benefit young people. They don't remove bullying or suddenly have a magic wand to remove inequality in the school system. And I think that there are arguments to be made for why removing uniforms is a good thing. I mean, I don't know about you, but Would you be comfortable going into work every single day in a blazer, a tie, a shirt, and a rigid uniform?
I don't know, would that be make handy work any harder? Sometimes. I don't think so. It might be handy, Emma. I'll tell you, though, we're speaking to you from an area of, and as I say, this is just for the purpose of conversation, we're speaking to you from an area of high poverty, lowest disposable income, an awful lot of poverty. Poverty amongst children. Is it not an argument enough then that at least with school uniforms, it takes out the who's got the nicest runners, you know, who's got the nicest shirt, jumper? On the most basic level, does it not sort of take the pressure off parents to try and cope with the one-upmanship that would be inevitable in the school? Or has that argument been debunked also?
Well, I think given the price of uniforms for a start, it is often very expensive for families to cover the cost of an annual uniform. And it doesn't really remove the issues around social class within the education system. Because, of course, there are always the haves and have-nots evident, whether that's from children having to have hand-me-down blazers or whether it's children that are able to have the coolest, most expensive bag. There are always these kind of indicators around social class. And if you look at actually some of the stuff around bullying statistics, for example, you know, Ireland has as many as 44% of our young people experiencing peer violence and bullying within the education system. Whereas whenever there was a survey done across European countries, 8 of 41 do have uniforms, the rest don't. And the countries that have the lowest level of bullying in the school system are countries that do not have a uniform system. So that's countries like Portugal, Spain, Netherlands, bottom of the chart when it comes to bullying. So I think that the evidence kind of demonstrates that uniforms do not remove that issue around social class and bullying within the school system.
Yeah, exactly. And another problem with that is, and you've mentioned it's the cost of uniforms, is there, I don't know what arrangements there are, but jumpers that you have to get from specific shops. Then next thing you know, there's a crested PE outfit, mm-hmm. and then there's a fleece that has a crest on it, and then there's a jacket that has a crest on it. So unfortunately, the system itself is arguing against your uniform, sort of leveling the playing field in terms of people's, you know, financial background or what have you, because parents are struggling to find the hundreds of euro to get all of the items that I've mentioned there. So my argument would make more sense if there were generic jumpers, generic trousers, easy to iron on crests, and wear whatever you want to pee. Unfortunately, that simply is not the case. So I'm arguing with myself here, but it's annoyed me for a long time, Emma.
Yeah, and I wonder what the ethos is behind that. You know, why is it that the idea of having a very simple standardized uniform is so
difficult? I think it's because it's like, I think if you've got three schools in an area, I think somewhere in the ethos there that it's like, well, our students and our school's going to look better than that school. Because I can't see any other real logic for it. But that's counter to the level playing field argument that I was trying to make to you earlier on, because instantly it creates a hierarchy almost within a school environment.
This is it. And in a way, you know, the uniform system is almost more about the school, certainly more than it is about the actual students, because it's about how they appear within the community. It's about the, you know, the image of the school, perhaps. And in terms of looking at the educational benefits of school uniforms, there's no evidence they have any benefits at all for educational outcomes. So it's really not really about the curriculum, but more the hidden curriculum around conformity, around discipline. And, you know, is that really what our teachers should be focusing on instead of trying to, you know, the basics of education?
So what's the argument for not having a uniform? Because look, you know, in terms of being able to identify what school you're from, if you're out, you know, if people go downtown during lunch and all that type of stuff, let's say there are some schools out there that do have sort of generic jumpers where you can iron the crest on and that's fine, right? So, and then let's just say that everyone is the same. It's not who's got the nicest trousers, who's got the nicest jumper. Yeah. All right, so that's the argument for. So what is the argument against this? So what might the benefit be, Emma, in your research to having no uniform at all and not using those arguments, if you know what I mean? So why might it be better?
Well, a big part of it is the fact that there's an argument to be made around allowing young people to express themselves and to have creativity, to have more of their individual sense of themselves when they're growing up. Think about the workplace today, Greg. So, you know, most workplaces do not have dress codes. We're not preparing young people for the real world if they have to wear these kind of rigid uniforms in the education system, or politicians don't even have a dress code they can go to work in sportswear, so why not our children? So, and the other issue is it also kind of, a lot of uniforms can reinforce gender norms, they can be very restrictive. So it's a case of allowing young people to focus on creativity and individual personality.
Yeah, but if it's about reinforcing gender norms, right, we don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater here either. You know, I mean, there are loads of options. My experience is schools are very respectful of how students might identify. You know, it's not unusual for girls to wear trousers, for an example. I mean, do we not need to sort of get past where we identify ourselves by the clothes that we wear? Do you know what
we do? We do need to get past that, but we're not at that point where universal acceptance.
But the idea is that you dress within the school rules as you feel comfortable, and we allow that to happen. I don't think there's an awful lot of boys looking to wear skirts to school. I'm not, you know what I mean? I don't mean that facetiously either. I'm not saying it's not the case, right? So to throw out the uniform because it's forcing or it's encouraging children to conform to gender norms, I'm not sure that's
it's not just about conforming to gender norms, Greg. It's conformity in general, because you're enforcing a discipline and a conformity where there's no individual within the school system. It's about just everyone being the same, and that's not really preparing young people for the real world, where we're asking them to do critical thinking in the education system, but we're also asking them not to raise their head or have any kind of individuality as a person. So
what
there's
are
a
you
conflict
judging me on what I'm wearing now. I'm not looking at you and judging you. And what I think you're wearing a t-shirt and a top over the top of it. I'm wearing a shirt just here because it's handy, and I'm wearing this jumper, right, because I didn't want to iron the shirt. So yeah, I put the shirt on and then I put this jumper on, and it means I'm sweating, but I can't take the jumper off because my shirt is creased. That's real life, isn't it? I'm not trying to express anything here.
No, but the thing is you had that choice this morning, Greg, didn't you? And young people are not getting that choice. Okay. They're not getting that choice to put on something that's comfortable, that they feel comfortable in. They're not having any choice at all. So I think what will be an interesting point to bring into this conversation is, what about those families that have young people go into non-uniform schools in Ireland? What are their experiences?
Yeah,
what are the experiences of young people that are now going to these schools? There's 37,000, over 37,000 young people in Ireland attend non-uniform schools, and the sky is not falling in.
We're going to have to continue the conversation. It's far more interesting than I was expecting, and I mean that with absolute respect. I know you understand that. Emma D'Souza, thank you very much indeed. Writer, political commentator, and just at the end of the show, the phone lines have lit up on that issue. We'll come back to it tomorrow. Have a lovely day, will you all? Thank you so much for being part of the 9 till noon show. We're back with you tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. Take care. John Breslin's next.